Blog Talk Radio.
From Dog Works Training Centers, professional canine training centers in Denver, Colorado, and Anchorage, Alaska, this is Dog Works Radio, committed to families and their dogs to build lifelong and fulfilling relationships. Visit our website at dogworksradio.com. Dog Works Radio is part of Twine Group Media and syndicated worldwide on blogtalkradio.com. Now, here are your hosts, Robert and Michelle Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto hosting Dog Works Radio from Anchorage and Willow, Alaska. On the phone is our co-host and business partner, Michelle, calling in from Denver, Colorado. How are you?
I'm doing wonderfully. It's already warm here today, so I always want to remind people to take precautions when they take their dogs out and make sure you carry along water and snacks for them as well.
So what's going on at Denver Dog Works down in the Mile High City?
Well, we, as you mentioned a few days ago on our blog, we went back to our roots and we are offering group classes nightly for a modified version of Canine Good Citizen. Nightly at 7 p.m. If you're interested, you need to give me a call as soon as you can because those classes start on August 1st. There are also three other classes offered on Sundays for your convenience. There is only one class offered on Saturday, and that is our lifetime group class, and I will explain that if you call. 303-578-9881. It is a huge savings and investment for you and your dog. I mean, $99 gets you 8 weeks of group classes and the opportunity to attend lifetime group twice a month.
And with that, you can visit our website at denverdogworks.com or follow us on Twitter or Facebook. Just type in Denver Dog Works in the search bar. Today, we're starting up a brand new segment on Dog Works Radio. We're going to do what we call Rescue Tales Radio. And with that, we have a special guest on. I know it's a friend of Michelle's, and they've been working quite a bit together with a breed that's kind of close to our heart, the Siberian Husky. Michelle, go ahead and introduce your friend and guest, please.
My friend and guest, I met Tara Lord a few months ago through another rescue that we're not going to name today because this is about Tara and her rescue that she just started not too long ago, Mile High Husky Rescue here in Denver, Colorado. And Tara, I'm going to turn it over to you. Tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got started, and why you branched out on your own to start Mile High Husky Rescue.
Well, I started Mile High Husky Rescue a few months ago because there is a real need for it here in Colorado. We have a lot of previously loved, abandoned, abused, neglected Siberian Huskies that need to be placed in homes. Unfortunately, a lot of people, when they get this breed, they get it just because they're adorable little puppies, and they don't really understand what this particular breed needs in terms of exercise and attention.
Right, and I'm glad you mentioned that because in Colorado, the Siberian Husky is a very popular breed, and you couldn't be more right. There are a lot of people that get a Siberian Husky because it's the fad, cool thing to do here in Colorado, but then they don't really do a lot of research and find out what exactly makes a Siberian Husky tick. And Robert, you can help enlighten our listeners about that. I mean, there is a difference between a Siberian Husky that's been bred for pets, a Siberian Husky that's been bred for work, such as sledding, and a Siberian Husky that's been bred for the show ring. Can you go into a little bit about that for us?
Well, I have a question for Tara, and we're talking to Tara Lord at MileHighHuskyRescue.com. You can find out more about her by following her on Facebook, and I believe she has a Twitter account too, but if not, we will make sure that she has one up and running. So, Tara, my question to you is, when you receive these Siberians, where are they coming from? Are they coming from working homes, or are they coming from just your average pet home, or where, or do you even know?
The majority of the dogs that we take in are pets. They're companion animals, and the majority of them I am pulling out of shelters when their time runs out. Unfortunately, there are just so many of them, not just in Colorado, but also in some of our neighboring states that don't have husky rescues. So they will transport them to me. There are different organizations of volunteers that do nothing but pull these dogs before they're going to be put to death and bring them here to Colorado so that we can foster them, rehabilitate them, get them all the vetting that they need, and find them the right home.
And why did you pick the Siberian? Is it a breed that you're familiar with, or is it just something that, you know, you saw one dog in the window, so to speak, and you had to jump on it, and that's how you got started? Why the Siberian?
I just fell in love with the Siberian Husky when one of them wandered onto my property about 15 years ago. I didn't even know what breed he was. I just knew that I really liked him. And I pretty quickly realized that he didn't like being alone and he needed a friend. At the time, I was living in California, so I contacted a Husky rescue out there who put me in touch with another dog that was a perfect match for him. And then I was just a happy pet owner for about 10 years. And then I started to volunteer for a couple of other rescue organizations and realized what an incredible need there was for this breed. And that is when I decided to branch out on my own, and I founded Mile High Husky Rescue. And we have really grown and taken off since I did start this up a few months ago. There are a lot of wonderful families out there who want to rescue these dogs, but they just don't know where to go.
And, you know, in today's day and age, social media is a big boon to just about every business, but it's a big, way to stay in contact with rescues. And I see hundreds of posts every day on Facebook and Twitter of people talking about their rescues. How do you utilize social media with Mile High Husky Rescue?
Well, Facebook is really how I stay in touch with a lot of my adopters and potential adopters, because it's just a great way for people to see the whole process. They see when I'm getting ready to take a dog into rescue. I post the picture from the shelter and say, this guy's coming in, and this is what we know about him. And then once he arrives and we get him into the bed and we get him in to see Michelle, then we post the updates about his behavior and his health. And it really lets people be involved in the rescue process and just communicate with me online to see what's going on and to find the right fit for their families.
And it's a much more fluid process on social media like Facebook. And I know a big part of rescues is, making sure that they're the right fit. And in today's day and age with Facebook, if you're friends with Facebook, you can pretty much figure out what these people are all about just by reading their Facebook posts. So I think that's a great way to interact with potential fosters or adopted pet parents and, make the best placement that you can. So with that, Tara, I know we're going to start this segment every week as much as we can about an individual rescue, and you're the first one since you guys are friends there in Denver, Michelle and yourself. We want to talk about a little story about one of your dogs, and I know you have a story to share. Let's talk about, one of these dogs that really touched your heart.
Spirit, my little feral girl Spirit. There was a posting put on Craigslist back in December that in downtown Denver, in a vacant lot, and I mean right in the heart of downtown Denver, people kept seeing this black and white, blue-eyed husky. And so somebody posted on Craigslist to try and get a rescue started for it. So a group of us got together and started emailing back and forth. And we started to feed her in the same spot every day for about 3 weeks. She was incredibly timid, wouldn't come anywhere near you, ran the opposite way if you tried to call her. So we got her used to eating in the same place, and then we went ahead and borrowed a humane trap, the crate-style trap, and we put it out, and we put some food in it. It was a really bad, bad part of town, and there were homeless people living at the end of the vacant lot, and just a block away there was a scrapyard. So we had to even lock down the trap so that it didn't get stolen. And the next morning when I came back to check the trap at the crack of dawn, much to my surprise, there was a dog in it, but it wasn't the husky. It was a Labrador Retriever. So we got the lab. We took him right to the vet, and we scanned for a microchip, and lo and behold, he had a microchip. So we called the owner, and it turns out he had been missing for 4 months. It was a few days before Christmas. The owner started crying when I called her. She had been looking for the dog. She thought I was calling to say the dog had died. So she was just ecstatic. Now, Spirit, which is what we've since named her, being the smart husky that she is, obviously saw her friend in the trap, would not go near the trap, And I put everything in that trap, hot dogs, chicken nuggets, raw chicken, everything under the sun. She wouldn't go near it. I would see her sit by it, but she just refused to go near it. So on the suggestion of somebody who traps wildlife, they said, you've got to get a different trap that doesn't smell like the lab. So we went ahead, we purchased another trap, and then she disappeared for 3 weeks. We didn't know where she was, and another volunteer saw her. She had moved to another lot right across the light rail tracks. So we started the process again of feeding her in the same spot, just regular dog food, for about 3 weeks, and then I got the trap out. And this smart little girl would go into the trap, and she would steal the food. So she got so smart about stealing the food that I tied the food down with some chicken twine. I took raw chicken and I tied it to the back of the trap. Well, that wasn't strong enough. She just pulled it right off. So then I put some tight nylon rope on, and she would just go in there, step over the trip plate, and then chew it off. So I finally put something over the bottom of the trap so she couldn't see the trip plate. And after about a month of this cat and mouse game, I finally caught her. And much to my surprise, I thought she had just been out there a couple of months. There was an RTD manager there in a truck nearby who informed me that she'd been living out there for 2 years. Hmm. And the reason why he was out there is because she kept crossing the light rail and interfering with the trains, so they would sit there to try and keep her off the tracks during the busy times. So I was able to get his help, get her loaded into the truck, and bring her into rescue, and she's actually here with me now. We've been rehabilitating her now for about 6 months. I've been bringing her to see Michelle over at Dog Works and working with her, and she's just a lovable little dog. She's about 5 years old. She had a tumor that we found. We thought it was a foreign object. It turned out to be a tumor, so we were able to do a fundraiser and raise some money and get that tumor removed, and she also had a broken abscess tooth that we got taken care of. And now she's just a happy dog, and she's sort of my mascot for Mile High Husky Rescue.
And it goes to show that that's how a lot of rescue folks are. They are very persistent. They will continue to work and work and work until they meet the need, whether it's a placement of the dog or capturing one that's running around loose. Because I know we do have a very bad feral dog problem, especially in the big cities like Denver and L.A. And of course, other places like that. So we do appreciate your story, Tara. Is there anything else? You have a couple of minutes left in this first segment that you want to share about Mile High Husky Rescue.
I do. I would like to talk about one of the dogs that we took into rescue about 6 weeks ago. She is a gray and white blue-eyed husky. Her name is Sugar, and we named her Sugar because she is just the sweetest, most gentle dog. We just adore her. A friend of mine gets the euthanasia list from one of the big shelters here in town and sent it over to me and said, hey, they've got a husky mix on here. And I took one look and said, that's not a husky mix. So I went down to see her, and they said that they weren't going to adopt her out because she had arthritis. They were going to euthanize her. So we went ahead, pulled her from the shelter, brought her into rescue, discovered she doesn't have arthritis. What she actually has is a problem with her knee. She has a partially torn crucia. So she's going to need knee surgery. So we are now doing a fundraiser to get her the surgery that she needs that's going to make her adoptable. So if there's anybody out there who's willing to spend a couple extra bucks for us to help this girl become adoptable and get her surgery so we can place her, you can send us a payment via PayPal at taraconnect@yahoo.com, or just connect with us on Facebook, and I'll post all the information there.
And I'll make sure that we post the links on our show page after the show today. So, Tara, it's been a pleasure having you on. I'm sure that you and Michelle will continue to work together at Denver Dog Works. This is Tara Lord from MileHighHuskyRescue.com. Again, find her on Facebook, and she'll make sure to start answering your questions if you have any information to share about some Siberians in the Colorado, Nebraska, Kansas area. Tara, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you. And we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we have another guest. He is a award-winning producer for pet first aid and CPR videos. So we're going to take a quick break and be right back.
At Denver Dog Works, we offer a service dog training program for individuals nationwide. Each and every service dog that is trained through Denver Dog Works and Michelle Forto and her team has an individualized training plan. Michelle trains for autistic, mobility, medical alert, and psychiatric service work. In each case, the needs of the individual are met, and training of each dog is specialized for their handler's specific needs. It takes approximately 2 years to train a service dog and takes a tremendous amount of patience, handling, and work from everyone involved, including the family members of the service dog recipient. If you are interested in finding out more about our service dog training program, please visit our website at denverdogworks.com or give us a call at 303-578-9881.
Team Aneke and Robert Forto are training for the Iditarod and are looking for corporate and individual sponsors to help chase this dream. Running the race is the easy part. Proper year-round care can cost upwards of $30,000. From feeding, vet care, travel to races and more, we give the dogs the best. There are several sponsorship levels to choose from. Check out our website at teamaneke.com. We will see you on the trail. Mosh, you Huskies! Gee-haw! Whether you're a Schnauzer Shakespeare or a Hound Dog's Hemingway in the making, perk up your ears. Dog Works Radio is teaming up with animal chaplain Sid Corfee, author of the award-winning book, Good Grief, Finding Peace After Pet Loss, in presenting the Petlitzer Prize Contest, the Pet-Related Writer's Pulitzer. Animal lovers can showcase their creative writing abilities for nifty awards and for the chance to have their works read live on DogWorks Radio. Categories range from poetry to short stories to persuasive essays and more. For more information, visit the blog page at www.goodgriefpetloss.com and click on the Petlitzer Prize link.
And we are back. You're listening to Dog Works Radio. My name is Robert Forto, and I'm hosting from Willow, Alaska. And on the line, we have Michelle calling in from Denver. She is our co-host. Michelle, we talked to Tara Lord of Mile High Husky Rescue. I know you guys work quite a bit together. Just to kind of sum up real quick about the husky problem in Denver, what are you seeing with a lot of these guys that are coming in?
Well, I don't necessarily think that it's a problem in the Rocky Mountain region, not necessarily just in Colorado. We here at Denver Dog Works, we see a lot of clients that bring in Siberian Huskies because of our connection with them. And they call me and they'll say, okay, I rescued this dog. I got this dog from the shelter. I was in driving through Kansas and, wherever they were. In the Rocky Mountain region, there is a huge influx of this breed because of its popularity. And what's happening is I think that a lot of people, as you and I are aware, they get these dogs because they are beautiful, gorgeous creatures. And as you are aware, a Siberian Husky is not the same as the next. Same, as with most breeds. But there is some predictability with other breeds, like Golden Retrievers and things. You know that they're going to do X, Y, and Z. With a Siberian Husky, they might not do X, Y, and Z. They might do LMNOP, So it's just one of those things that I think the breed is very popular and people get in over their heads with it.
There you go. So we're now going to introduce our next guest. His name is Arthur Levy, and he's the owner and the videographer for Apogee Communications Group out of Boulder, Colorado. Mr. Levy, are you there today?
Yes, I am.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you for taking time out on a Sunday afternoon. We want to talk today about your pet first aid and CPR video. I got a chance to watch it yesterday with my son. I tell you what, when you talk about award-winning production, that is a great video that you guys have.
Thank you very much. Our goal is to save dogs' lives and make pet owners aware of the problems their animals can get into. I've got a 3-year-old German Shepherd working dog, and he's very well behaved and he's extremely obedient, but like all dogs, they can have their moments and they can get cut by glass. And it's good to know what's available and how to treat your dog, whether it's a pet or a working dog. A lot of people own dogs that are hunters and take their dogs out maybe once a year hunting, and they run into problems because the dogs get dehydrated. There have been a lot of reports of dogs getting shot or having other medical problems while in the field away from a veterinarian, and knowing what to do and how to do it can save your dog's life.
Well, you know, Arthur, before we get too much into the video, I want to talk a little bit about you and kind of your biography. I received that on email early this week, and I tell you what, you have done just about everything in the world of video. You've been with presidents and, you know, campaigns and the whole nine yards. So let's give people a little bit of background about you, because you're one interesting guy.
Well, thank you. I spent my whole life as a journalist doing radio news back in Denver in the early days, and then some national radio reporting, and then on to still photography and film and video, and ended up working for the TV networks for about 25 years, traveling the country, covering all types of stories. And I did have a chance to get up to Alaska for a month with Roger Karras from ABC when Roger was alive, and got to see some beautiful scenery in Alaska that most people never get to. We went by jet, by private aircraft, by seaplane and canoe, and flew all over Alaska. So it was quite an experience.
And, you know, a lot of people don't quite understand that. They think they can just drive up here from the lower 48 and just have your regular vacation, and they can't. You have to, you literally have to go by plane, train, and automobile just to get just about anywhere. And as a journalist, I'm sure you were, you know, just checking out all the sights up here and just how beautiful this state is, because it is literally magnificent place to live up here in Alaska. So how in the world did you get involved with pet first aid videos and that sort of genre, away from, you know, the political, you know, videos and commercials on radio and television? How'd you get involved with what you're doing now?
Well, I was a volunteer firefighter and an EMT and first responder for many years, and going through the EMT class and learning about humans, I wonder if that could be applied to pets. And more I looked into it, there was nothing out there. So we developed both a dog and cat emergency first aid DVD, and have been very successful with it. We were originally endorsed by the ASPCA, and we've private labeled for several national organizations. And the current DVD has the latest CPR guidelines on it, which have changed for humans, although doing the old guidelines really doesn't hurt. It's just getting recognized a dog is not breathing and starting CPR that helps. But I've always been involved in emergency medicine, and being a dog owner over the years, I've had a practice some of my medicine on my dogs. The DVD is not a substitute for your veterinarian. It's just giving you the basic information on what to do and how to do it, and what, more importantly, to report to your veterinarian, because that's extremely important. It's just being able to recognize what your dog is doing.
Right, right. And in your video, you're pretty comprehensive about the different illnesses and diseases and injuries that dogs can come in contact with. And I'm reading here on your website, on the bio here, it says that it has 36 chapters of important first aid information and includes an introduction to working dogs and things like that. So what do you think, going through the process of making this video, Arthur, what do you think the biggest problem is that dog owners are coming in contact with, whether it be an illness, an injury, and that injury could be a physical injury, like a broken bone or ingestion of some type of poison, or is it some type of, you know, other ailment that dog owners are seeing? Do you know that, what are you seeing that's probably the most prevalent in making this video?
One of the things that I was made aware of that I didn't know is a chemical called xylitol, which is a sugar substitute, and it's in a lot of sugarless gum. If you go to your store and pick up a package of sugarless gum and you see xylitol, in it, it's deadly for dogs. It's even more deadly than dark chocolate. So that was something new, and we worked closely with the ASPCA Animal Poison Control Center, and they're seeing a lot of cases of xylitol poisoning. And we talked to a local veterinary clinic here in Boulder that has seen quite a few cases of xylitol poisoning come in. The other big thing that I just never was aware of, and it is quite common, is bloat and torsion. That's when a deep-chested dog will ingest a lot of water or food quickly. And my German Shepherd will gulp the water down, and I have to pull him back. And what happens is the stomach fills with air along with the food and water. And it can be very, very rigid, and the stomach then will actually turn. That's the torsion. And it can kill a dog in 90 minutes. So if your dog is gulping down a lot of water or food, and you feel its abdomen, and it's rock hard, it's like touching a steel drum, you need to call your vet immediately. And I would go one step further. If you do, one of the big symptoms of bloat and torsion is a dog acting differently, maybe wanting to go outside and dry heaving. If you see that happen and the dog's abdomen is rigid, you want to find a 24-hour emergency vet clinic that can do emergency surgery, because the only way your dog is going to make it through is to get emergency surgery. And we spoke to a trainer that trains professional working dogs for the government, and she has several working dogs at her home, and one of them gulped down the food, and she luckily went out and checked on the dog, and it had bloat, and she put the dog in the car and right to the vet clinic, and they did surgery on it, and the dog was fine. But I've heard so many cases of people having their dogs die from bloat and torsion.
And there is a preventative surgery for that, and a lot of people don't know about that. It's where they pretty much go in and they staple the stomach wall to the muscle and to the tissue in the back, you know, towards the back of the dog, and it prevents this type of thing. I don't know exactly what that procedure is called, but for people that are using their dogs for working environments, you know, canine cops and, you know, search and rescue and that sort of thing, a lot of times this type of surgery they do so they can alleviate this very potential life-threatening problem with their dogs. Do you know what that's called by chance, Arthur?
I think it's called a pixie, and they do it laparoscopically now. So it's just three small incisions, and if a dog is being neutered or is in the vet for another procedure, it's a relatively simple procedure to do. I think the military does it to all of their dogs. You know, work in, and I should really define a working dog. A working dog can be any breed from a little beagle up to a big German Shepherd. They're all breeds. There are a lot of Labs, Golden Retrievers, just about every type of breed. And in search and rescue, there are several organizations that go to animal shelters all over, and they test dogs there. And if the dog has the aptitude for search and rescue, they take them out of the shelter and put them through the training. So it doesn't have to be an expensive purebred dog that is a working dog. And there are a lot of service dogs that help the blind, and it's just people just focus narrowly on German Shepherd type dogs. But as I say, they're all breeds, all different backgrounds, and they all have one thing in common: they love to work. And it's extremely rewarding having a working dog. My dog is in search and rescue class, and his scenting is unbelievable. But it takes a lot of dedication. But there are also people that go hunting once a year, and their dogs are just as important as they are to police officers and the military. So there are a lot of dogs out there, and pet owners really need to understand how to treat their dog if they become injured.
Arthur, what is your website where people can find out more information about your videos?
It's www.apogee, it's APOGEE video, all one word, .com. That's www.apogeevideo.com.
And you are on Facebook and Twitter. You can just search Apogee Video in the search box, and it will pull right up. We're talking to Arthur Levy. He is the man behind these videos that we're talking about. And I would like to touch on one subject that you mentioned just a second ago about poisoning. And a lot of people are misunderstood about this. It's when they call the Poison Control Center. A lot of people don't understand that there is a charge for this service. And I know that you talk about this in the video. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. The ASPCA does have a charge, although I am not quite sure. I think if it's a poison that is from a major manufacturer, sometimes they waive the charge. I'm not 100% sure on that. But they offer tremendous service. They're 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and they're staffed by toxicologists. And the few times that I've had to use them, they're right there. They have all the information at their fingertips. And for the small fee, it's more than worth it, because there are many things that you can do at home before you get to the vet. And just knowing what to do and how to do it in the proper proportions, if you feed your dog or give your dog activated charcoal, or they suggest something else, it could end up saving your dog's lives. There are some poisons that are caustic that they don't want you to induce vomiting on. And the best thing to do is to talk to an expert. And if you talk to your veterinarian, you'll find that a lot of vets end up calling the Animal Poison Control Center to get the latest information.
And I know you talked about in your video having a list of phone numbers hanging on your refrigerator, or in today's day and age, having in your iPhone or your cell phone or whatever. I remember when I was a little kid, we had those Mr. Yuck stickers sticking on the refrigerator for the poison control. So even back in the 70s, the importance of making sure that those numbers are readily available are important. Can you tell us what numbers that we should have on that list, whether it's on the refrigerator at the house or in your cell phone?
Well, actually, it should be on all of those things. Definitely your local veterinarian that you take your animal to. But also, I'd go one step further and find a 24-hour veterinary emergency clinic in your area that's staffed. That's extremely important, because you don't want to call your vet at 3 o'clock in the morning and they don't open until 9. The other number would be the ASPCA Animal Poison Control Center, and their number is 888-426-4425. That's 888-426-4425. And the good thing about the Animal Poison Control Center is they're there 24 hours a day, and you're going to talk to somebody that can give you the right advice immediately without putting you on hold or trying to page someone or call someone and have them get back to you. And on critical things, every second counts.
Right. And I know, and a very important number to have on there is somebody that you can depend on that can get you and your dog to the vet. I know this is a little bit a different scenario if you're hiking or whatever, but a lot of these type of injuries do happen in the home or in the yard, you know, surrounding your property. I think it's important to have a neighbor or a family member on that list that you can call immediately, because, and you describe this in your video, your dog does much better if they're handled by you. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, that's exactly right. I mean, talking with law enforcement people, there have been many cases of police dogs being shot. And one reoccurring theme I keep hearing is that the police officer, the firefighter, they should concentrate on calming their dog, holding their dog, and have someone else drive to the vet clinic. We had a case here in Boulder several years ago where a couple were doing CPR on their dog and speeding to the vet clinic, and they got in an accident, and the dog didn't make it, and both people were severely injured. So it's really important to stay calm, keep your dog calm in a tense situation, and get them to the vet. And it's also a good idea to call ahead. A lot of veterinary offices are extremely busy, and if you call ahead and say you're bringing your dog in, describe what the emergency is, and let them know so they can prepare, it will really help.
And we talk a lot about what happens at the home, but so many of these injuries occur, especially in Colorado, where it's an outdoor lover's paradise, is out on those hiking trails at the campsite and things like that. And people are taking their dogs more and more to these outings and vacations. How should people prepare for this? You know, a lot of people think about whether they were Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts, and they have to always be prepared and carry all of this extra stuff with them if they're hiking up on Long's Peak or, you know, something like that. What is the best advice that you guys can give for people that are going out just on a weekend hike or a weekend vacation on how to prepare for these outings with your pets?
I think a small first aid kit can really come in handy. You don't have to carry a big trauma kit with you, but several rolls of different size, different widths of vet wrap, the multicolored tape that is really good, 4x4 bandages. There are some commercially available electrolyte solutions that you can mix with water if your dog gets dehydrated. And with these hot temperatures that we're having now, you can also feed your dog Pedialyte, clear Pedialyte, which is a electrolyte solution for babies. And there are some other companies that make a specially formulated powder that helps rehydrate a dog, and that's extremely important. You can carry a little package with you. Something else I would also suggest is hemostatic bandages. These are little bandages that can be a 1x1 piece of gauze, a 4x4, or several other sizes of major trauma gauze pads. And what they do is if you apply direct pressure to the wound with the hemostatic bandage on, it will clog bleeding in anywhere from 3 to 5 minutes. And they're using the same bandages in Iraq and Afghanistan on humans. I mean, our soldiers have been using this for quite a while. Originally, there was a powder that came out that would stop bleeding, but there were some side effects. It actually caused some burns, and now they have gauze that's impregnated with the hemostatic agent, and there's several companies that are manufacturing different size bandages. They're lightweight. They can fold up, and you can put them in a plastic bag and carry them with you. The big problem is a lot of times a dog will come in contact with a barbed wire fence. The bleed will be severe, and like you were saying, the owners are a long way from the road and a veterinarian, and just having these basic first aid kit with you with the right things in that can save your dog's life.
We're talking to Arthur Levy and his video, Pet Emergency First Aid for Dogs, and I reviewed the Working Dog Edition, but there are several other videos that they do offer. So I want to make sure that you guys visit his website at apogee, ApogeeVideo.com, ApogeeVideo.com. Michelle, do you have a question for Arthur?
No, I just was wondering, you know, Arthur obviously has sent you a working dog video. How many other videos does he have, and are they breed specific, or are they, you know, like companion dogs and things like that?
All of the, we have two different versions. One has more information than the other, and they are definitely not breed specific. And we called it the working dog edition because we did show a lot of dogs, both hunting and law enforcement and military in the DVD. But both programs are applicable to all dogs, whether they're a small pet up to a large dog. And in the working dog edition, you'll see a little beagle, and almost looks like a beagle puppy, that is a working dog working for Border Patrol and Customs, sniffing people's luggage at the airport. And when I first saw the footage, I couldn't believe it because it looked like a puppy. But it was a beagle that was trained for scenting. And working dogs are every breed, and the information contained in it is equally applicable to household pets all the way up to law enforcement dogs and military working dogs.
In the video, you talk about three specific letters, and I don't want to give them away myself. I want you to describe those if you could. Can you talk about those letters?
The CPR?
The CABs, I believe you call it?
CAB, circulation, yeah. Airway, and breathing. The American Heart Association has revised, based on their studies, the order. It used to be the ABCs, now it's the CABs. It's circulation, airway, and breathing. And as with humans, they're suggesting that chest compressions alone are more effective than not. Sometimes people are afraid to, and this goes with dogs also, to breathe into a dog's nose. And if you just do the chest compressions, the dog has a better chance than if you sit there and do nothing, because if you do nothing, the outcome, unfortunately, will be death. I have heard of many, many cases that dogs have been saved doing CPR. It's not just with humans. And actually, I understand, and I may be wrong at this, but CPR on dogs is more effective than humans. And I've saved three people as a firefighter doing CPR, and it does work. It doesn't work all the time. But if you start CPR immediately, and this is true with humans, the quicker you start, the quicker, whether it be a human or a dog, has a chance to survive.
And how long is that that you need to start? I mean, if you walk up on a dog, you know, and you have no idea how long he's been there, what do you think is that magic time? I know in human medicine they call it the golden hour of trauma in terms of getting the person help, but in CPR and in first aid, you know, CPR and breathing, it's about 6 minutes. Is there a different time frame for dogs? Do you know, Arthur?
No, I think it's basically the same. The quicker you do it, the quicker you start, the better the dog's chances are. You know, a lot of things are applicable in both humans and animals, and I was talking to a rep from one of the companies that makes a automatic external defibrillator, which are very effective on humans, and he was telling me about a hunting trip he was on, and he happened to have an AED in the truck, and a dog went into cardiac arrest, and they quickly shaved the dog, got the pads on it, and shocked the dog and saved the dog. So not suggesting that you go out and buy an AED for your dog, but if you should have one in your home, you and your dog is susceptible to going into cardiac arrest, you might talk to your veterinarian And on all of these things for first aid, you should definitely start talking to your local vet, because they have a better idea of what they're seeing in their area. Heartworm is another thing that until I saw the pictures, I had no idea. Once you see the pictures there in the video, it looks like a handful of angel hair pasta, and it's in the dog's heart. It'll make you give your dog heartworm pills religiously.
Right, and that's a big problem, especially down in the warmer climates. I don't think we have those problems up here in Alaska, but heartworm and heartworm preventative is one of those things that everybody should do for their dogs. It's a very simple, once a month pill. They taste like candy for the dogs, and you can alleviate probably one of the most treacherous health problems for your dog is that heartworm preventative. So I'm glad you brought that up, Arthur. We're talking to Arthur Levy and his video.
Levy, but that's okay.
Levy, I'm sorry. Levy, and his video, Pet First Aid and CPR. Arthur, what else do you want to mention? We have about 15 minutes left. The show is yours, so we don't have anybody calling in today, but, talk about whatever you like.
Okay, well, I think we've covered a lot of the things. Heartworms, definitely, it's worth, again, talk to your veterinarian. Also, I might mention that a lot of the human medicine has found its way into the canine field. There are dog cardiac catheterization labs now where they do heart surgery on dogs, and they also implant pacemakers in dogs. The pacemakers are donated by the medical device manufacturers, so you don't have to worry about the expense of getting the device. There are many dogs that have heart problems, and there are board-certified cardiologist in the veterinary field, which I had never heard of until the last 3 or 4 years. So they're not in every city, but they are out there. And a lot of times a dog will faint or have something unusual, and it turns out to be a heart-related issue. And as with humans, it does not have to be fatal. There are medications that will work. Pacemakers aren't that common, but they are implanted. Some dogs have holes in their heart, and they can be fixed. And it's a simple procedure. It's not open heart surgery, and the dogs recover very quickly. So your best source for good information is your veterinarian, and there are a lot of specialty vets that are out there that can deal with every problem. But I do want to mention also the working dog aspect, that any dog can be a working dog, and people spend a lot of money on their pets. Other people go to animal shelters and adopt a pet. And they all can be working dogs, and you'll see in the DVD that the military uses many, many breeds. So when you see a person working a dog, they may not be the stereotypical macho dog. It may be a little small dog. Matter of fact, bed bug sniffer dogs are very small, and they're working, they're smelling, they're using their nose, and a lot of hotels have the handler bring their dog in a small bag because they don't want to frighten the people that are staying at the hotel by seeing a big German Shepherd walk in. It's almost like they're doing a drug search. But these little dogs are able to go and sniff out bed bugs, and they're working. And with any breed, you never know what the dogs are going to get into. I just read yesterday that a police dog was doing a narcotics search and smelled some poison that ended up killing him. So all dogs can can have exactly the same problems. Dehydration is a problem with all dogs. And again, with these hot temperatures, I would say leave your dog home if he can't be in an air-conditioned vehicle. Just opening the windows sometimes, depending where you are and how warm it is, can be really life-threatening to your dog. And I love to keep my dog with me all the time, but there are many times that he is, I know he's safe at home, and it's a lot cooler than in a warm car on these hot summer days.
And you know, Arthur, I have to mention, everybody's talking about those hot temperatures down in the lower 48. Just the other day, up here in Alaska, I overheard a guy talking about he could not stand the heat up here, and he was wearing shorts and a tank top and all that. You know, we haven't had a temperature this summer above 70 degrees, and I just have to tell people that when they're talking about hundreds and 115 degree temperatures down there. Move to Alaska if you love that weather. Move up here where it doesn't get above 70. So I just had to throw that in there.
You have the man eating mosquitoes up there.
Oh, I know. We were working on the roof the other day, and I tell you what, a mosquito dang near carried me off the roof there. They're so big up here in the Willow area. So in this last few minutes, Arthur, let's talk about you and your dog. You said you guys were enrolled in a search and rescue class. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. He's being trained to – it's an urban search and rescue class. He's being trained to – scent and find children and Alzheimer's patients, and he is really amazing. I went to a local farmer's market yesterday with him. He scented on a little boy's socks, and the boy and his family walked through the hundreds of people and dogs, and I told my dog to find him, and he went right to the boy. And then we came back. I laid the dog down for about 10 minutes, and the boy was still there with his family in a different location, and the second time the dog went right to him. And what my dog is being trained for is if someone has Alzheimer's and the police or someone find them, a lot of time the people are very confused. They don't know where they came from. Well, the dog is trained to pick up the scent and take law enforcement or fire back to where that person came from. And we're doing a lot of practicing with it. And I have to tell you that the intelligence of these dogs just blows me away. And they're not all bloodhounds. Mine is the only German Shepherd in the program. But these dogs are absolutely amazing.
And the key to working with dogs is almost every dog that I've ever encountered, and people that listen to this show know that we specialize in a lot of canine sports and working dogs. We do protection training and, you know, scent work and service dogs and all that sort of thing. Is these dogs love to work no matter what the job is. You can literally give any dog out there a job and he'll want to do it, and his whole primary goal is just to please his owner, to focus on that job, and to do the best that he can possibly can. Don't you agree with that?
Exactly. And one thing I might say about protection, a lot of people think that protection dogs are vicious and they're mean. My dog has also been in protection class for a couple of years, and I take him right from protection, from running and going after the bad guy and biting the bite sleeve. He goes to licking kids' faces. It's having control over your animal and being able to turn them on when you need to, and more importantly is turning the dog off. And all of the law enforcement dogs I've met are friendly. They'll lick your face. And most of the dog handlers take their dogs home. They have families. They have little kids. And the dogs are a part of the family. They are not vicious.
What is your dog's name, Arthur?
Cody.
Cody. So
yeah,
pay attention, guys, if you're
the
out
DVD
there. And
on the left side.
What's that?
He's on the cover of the DVD on the left side.
Okay. All right. So if you like that video, make sure you go to apogeevideo.com, and you can, again, follow him those guys on Facebook and Twitter as well. So I know you guys are getting a review in Dog Fancy, and if anybody knows anything about dog magazines, they know about Dog Fancy and Dog World Magazine. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we're in the September issue. I just got my copy yesterday. We're in the September issue of Dog Fancy. They've got several stories about working dogs, and they featured the DVD. We're right on page 20, and it's prominently displayed. So it was very nice of them. And we also got several good reviews in library publications, library journals that are very tough to get anything reviewed in. And we get one highly recommends the working dog. And they all say these are for all pet owners, and hope people don't get misled by the title. Whether you have a Chihuahua or a Great Dane, everything in the video is applicable to your dog.
Right. And like you mentioned, this is just for, you know, it's information, but you can also gain some valuable insight with that. But it does not replace the care of the veterinarian, and I want to stress that as much as possible, and I'm sure you do too, is just because you've treated your dogs for whatever injury, whether they've choked on something or they've cut their foot pretty bad, you still want to make sure that you take them over to the veterinarian to make sure they're checked out, just like with human medicine, right?
Exactly, and these videos are definitely not a substitute for your vet. The basic use of this video is, number one, to make you aware, like the hemostatic bandages. If you're a hunter, sportsman, a hiker, put them in your backpack and know how to use them. And for a lot of these things, you don't want to have the emergency arise before you start thinking about what to do. The sooner you prepare and the more prepared you are, the calmer you're going to be.
Right, right. So, Arthur, in the last couple of minutes, tell us a little bit about your Facebook page and your Twitter feed. I know you post a lot of good information there. Do you keep the conversation alive on social media, or how do you utilize that with pet owners and talking about your video?
We try to post frequently, time permitting, on Twitter, and that also goes up on Facebook. We're going to try to post more because there are so many tips that dog owners are not aware of, like the heart problems and the treatment and heartworms. And right now the big thing is dehydration. And since you're in Alaska, let me add that dehydration is not just with hot weather. Dogs can get dehydrated in your backyard in cold weather. So you have to keep an eye on your dog and make sure they're well hydrated.
That's a great point. It doesn't have to be 100 degrees outside. It can be 20 below, and your dogs can dehydrate. And that's important with working sled dogs. A lot of times those dogs just aren't drinking enough, and you want to make sure that you do keep those dogs hydrated. They don't get enough hydration just from scooping snow. So, Arthur, let's finish up here. Give us a name, address, contact number of your business, et cetera.
Sure. It's apogeevideo.com, apogeevideo.com. The phone is 800-210-5700. That's 1-800-210-5700. And again, the website, www.apogeevideo.com.
And we're talking to Arthur Levy of apogeevideo.com. Thank you very much, Arthur. It's been our pleasure.
Thank you,
Robert. We'll talk again soon, okay?
Good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. So you're listening to DogWorks Radio. We're going to run out of time here real quick. Two great guests, Arthur Levy and Tara Lord, today talking about pet first aid and videos, as well as Mile High Husky Rescue. So with that, we'll be back on the air next Sunday, 12 o'clock Mountain Time, 2 o'clock p.m. on the East Coast. So on behalf of our guests and our co-host Michelle Forto, we'll see you guys next time. Never forget your dreams. Goodbye.